after which there will be a separate voting. The meeting will then go to a show of hands until 9:05 p.m. The last 10 minutes are reserved for those who feel they may drink and haven't had the chance to share. And now, to share her experience, faith, and hope with us, we have Therese. Yeah.
Hi, everybody. My name's Therese. I'm an alcoholic. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yep.
All righty. Thanks for asking me to share. Gentleman that asked me to share, I think he had to go to LA for business, so he was very nice and told me how to get here and who to talk to, and it's really great to be here tonight. I just have to take a deep breath. We just had a lot of carrot cake at Billy's Bakery, and my heart is racing from the sugar, but it was totally worth it. I never had a legal drink. I got sober December 4th, 1996, and I was 20 years old, and I never had a legal drink. I turned 21 a number of times in bars, you know? I was like, it's my birthday, I'm 21, and the guy's like, didn't you just celebrate that last week? And I'm like, no, that was somebody else, but I never had a legal drink, and it was crazy because I think about 6 or 7 years ago, I was maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was living in Astoria, Queens, and the person that was having a picnic asked me to bring a bottle of wine, and I was like, oh yeah, sure. And I'm like 37 now, I walked into a liquor store and I bought a bottle of wine, and I paid for the bottle of wine, and I walked out and I was like, whoa, I just bought a bottle of wine. Like, that blew my mind. And the guy didn't even bat an eye. He's just, you know, because in my mind, sometimes I'm still 20 years old. I'm still, like, doing the scam. I'm still, like, you know, trying to get my older brother to buy me the bottles of gin and, you know, boxes of wine and, you know, just trying to get whatever I can possibly get. And I can totally walk into a liquor store and buy alcohol. Yikes. Okay. So that's real. And thank God today I don't want to do that, you know. But yeah, it's a trip. It's a trip growing up sober in these rooms. So it's awesome to be here, and it's awesome to see so many young people. And I remember when I got sober, you know, the old timers in Pennsylvania, they would say stuff like, oh, I spilt more than you drank, and, you know, like, oh, you, I don't know, just all this craziness. And I was like, you know that it's a real struggle for me to be here. Like, you should probably not say things like that. But what I learned, you know, years down the road was they got this really, like, a lot later in life. And I got this chance to get sober at 20 years old, emotionally 11. I got to grow up, like, in AA. I got to have the last almost 18 years, you guys, I've been sober. I've been a part of life sober for the last almost 18 years. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of the old-timers, they felt badly about that. They came in at like 60 or, you know, in their late 50s, and they supported me. But a lot of times if you hear people say stuff like that, they don't mean it. You know what I mean? Like, we're just, it's just what we do. I took it really personally. That's why the only reason I'm saying anything about it. Because I'm a sensitive alcoholic, and, you know, I take a lot of stuff personally. I heard someone say the acronym for STEPS is stop taking everything personally. Like, work the steps and stop taking everything personally. I like that. Sobriety date, December 4th, 1996. Last drink, I'd had 15 months abstinent. I was hanging out with a guy that lived in a halfway house. I was dating him and up two other guys that were dating each other, and that was my support system. One picked up, a week later his boyfriend picked up, a week later my boyfriend picked up, a week later I picked up. And it was like a domino effect. And in 2.5 weeks, my disease took me to a place where I was almost killed in a drug deal. And I tried to kill myself a number of times. And something fundamentally shifted in me when someone else tried to take my life. Like a light switch went off. And I realized at that moment that I was where I was, in a drug den with drug dealers with weapons, because I'm an alcoholic. And not because mom and dad didn't give me enough attention, and not because older brother beat the crap out of me, and not because my family's super alcoholic and dysfunctional. I was in that position because of the choices I made and I was making. And that was a big wake-up call for me because I bought so many drinks and so many drugs or had given to me because of this effed up childhood that I carried on my back or carried in front of me like a badge. I would say to psychiatrists, my favorite thing was to get locked up in a psych ward because I did it like 4 or 5 times. And it was like a 30-day vacation where I could smoke cigarettes without having to, they'd let me smoke. And, I got to just talk about myself and my problems for 30 days. It was amazing. And I would always, compare myself to the other patients. And I was like, they're the ones that are really sick. I'm just, taking a break, Insanity, the second step. There's other ways to take breaks from reality than getting into a psych ward or overdosing and getting your stomach pumped multiple times. I looked at this stuff. My life was just one movie. And the only thing that changed was the background music. I lived in fantasy. When I was born into this family of 10 people, it was chaos, it was insanity, and I just tapped out into fantasy from day one. I just created my own world. So when drugs and alcohol came into the picture, it just made sense, And then when drugs and alcohol left the picture at 20 years old, fantasy's still there. I talked to girlfriends in the program. My trifecta is boys, booze, and blow. You take away the blow, you got the booze, you take away the booze, you got... I got clean and I got sober at 20 years old. Bring on the boys. Bring on the drama. Bring on the fantasy. And I think I'm in a safe enough place in my sobriety to talk real about this stuff. Because this is what's real. This is what was real for me. And after 6 months of being sober, I found my first hostage. And I made him fall in love with me. And, oh my gosh. It's so great to be able to talk about this without shame. I was afraid to talk about this for a long time, you guys. And it's great to share this way. His name was Michael, and he had a year. I had 6 months, so he was staying away. And I was like, oh, no. I had 15 months before. I'm really sober. And we spent the next 4.5 years together. And the problem was that I made Michael my higher power. My higher power was alcohol, and that was gone. And now here's Michael, and he can change the way that I feel. And if Michael is giving me attention, then I feel good about myself. And if Michael is not giving me attention, then I feel bad about myself. Michael, just being who he was, I gave him all my power. I gave him everything. He didn't ask for it. I just gave it to him. Because that's what I do when I don't have a higher power. I make you responsible for me being okay. And when, God forbid, you act as you do as a human being, I am so fucked up. What are you doing to me? Oh my God, why didn't he text me back? I'm like, I can't breathe. My emotions are at 150, Michael left after 4.5 years. Michael was done, son. He was like, he's like, girl, you're crazy. I wasn't working the steps. I just made Michael my world. I was 6 months sober, and then I stayed with him for 4.5 years. And you guys, I don't know if y'all remember being freshly sober, but it is crazy town, right? Do you remember feeling everything at the same minute? So all that rage that was percolating in me came out on poor Michael. And one night he told me, go home. That's all he said. Go home. And what I heard at 9 months sober, 20 years old, was you are unlovable, you are bad, you are defective, get out of my life. And so when Michael shut the door after simply saying, go home, I kicked the door off the hinges and attacked him in his bed with closed fists. Now, I'm not saying this because I'm proud of this. I'm saying this because I was like a caged animal. And this is the person that I will become without help. You took my booze away. The booze is gone. The drugs are gone. I am left with alcoholism. I've got a disease, right? And I thought the whole thing was it's just about drinking. It's just about, smoking. you guys, it's cray. Like, it's crazy town here. Like, this is what needs to be treated. Because that made sense to me, to kick somebody's door off the hinges and then attack him in his bed and then say to myself, why don't you love me? Like, it's a full-on Jerry Springer show, right? And I'm like, but logically, in my brain, I'm like, why is he so mad at me? I don't understand. What did I do? I was hurt. And that made total sense to me. And so, fast forward, Michael leaves, and I'm, by the grace of God, sober, but so crispy dry, like you can't even deal. Like, ready to just start a forest fire. And I finally, like, get this woman to sit down with me and start working some steps. And it wasn't like how you guys work the steps here. I never really had a big book. Like, I don't know what was going on. But, you know, I started to, like, go to more meetings. And the first 7 years of my sobriety, this is what I played with. And I want to be really honest about this, because I was really dry in the rooms of AA. And I thought that I was sober because I was going to meetings and I was making coffee and I was cleaning ashtrays and I was fellowshipping with friends afterwards and I was going out for coffee till like 4 a.m. and smoking 2 packs of cigarettes. Pack of Noops and a pack of Marbies. And I was like, life is great. It sucked because my insides were not getting any treatment. And that's what was sick. And after 7 years, I moved to New York City and to pursue dreams. And I was still hanging on to, so when Michael left, I just proceeded to get into one toxic relationship after another. And my favorite thing was me saying, why am I such a freak magnet? Yeah, there's no magnet going on here, ladies. I like brought you to me. Like, I found the freakiest dude in the room and I was like, you, come here, you know? There was no magnet. Like, oh, I'm such a victim. It's like, no, you love the crazy. You love the drama. And because I don't have my booze and my blow, I get the drama with the boys. And that's where I stayed for a long time. 7 years sober, still in another toxic relationship, moved to New York City. Dude calls me at like 7:30 in the morning. Of course, we've been broken up like a year and a half, but he's still calling because I have no boundaries. And, hey, Jesse, what's up? You know, and normally the conversation goes with him talking to me and then I'm in tears in like 2.5 minutes. And this is my drug, you guys. This is my drug now. This is my drug. Yeah. And so he says, oh, I met the woman of my dreams. We're going to go to Vegas. And I was like, uh-huh. And I hung up the phone, and something inside of me, the same thing that, you know, was inside of me when I almost got killed in that drug deal 7 years before, said in a very quiet voice, you need help. And so I was living 72nd and 2nd, and I found a meeting at Jan Hus, and it was a woman's meeting at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I walked in, and you guys, I was like a newcomer. Like, I was shaking, but I raised my hand. I said, I'm Therese, alcoholic. I just moved from Pennsylvania, and I need help. And then I shared about the ex calling me, and I was like, I think I need to go on a boy diet or something. Like, I don't know what I need to do, but I'm like, I feel like I'm drunk. Like, I feel like I'm drunk. And I met this woman a couple days later at a meeting, and I said, would you please work the steps with me? Because I am so close to picking up a drink. And I want to share honestly about that, because I come into AA, and I think if I just show up to these meetings, and I just kind of, you know, do some service, and, you know, I guess I'll do a couple steps. Like, I'm not really into that fourth step. And, all right, I'll apologize to some people and stuff. Half measures avail me nothing, because what happens is I've got this hole inside of me that needs to be filled, and if I don't fill it with a higher power, I'm going to fill it with anything else. I mean, come on, right? Booze and blow is gone, right? So we've got boys, we've got shopping, we've got, you know, chocolate, we've got, I mean, anything. Like, it's like this little baby grabbing for everything outside, like, gimme, 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 gimme. And so I met this sponsor, and I asked her to please work with me, and she started to work the steps with me and out of the big book, and we read the first 164 pages, and I started to learn about my disease of alcoholism. And I didn't know. I mean, who knew that there was, like, this disease inside of me, you know, that, like, craves this stuff? I just thought I was, like, boy crazy or like just I'm just crazy. It's like, no, you're sick. You're a sick girl trying to get well. So here's our treatment. Here's our insulin. It comes in the form of the 12 steps. Comes in the form of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, listening to the solution, sharing rigorously honest about what's really going on. Not what I want to sound really good in the meeting, and oh my God, Jimmy's here and he's so fucking hot, and I have to like sound not too crazy, but just crazy enough, so maybe he wants to, I don't, like this is how I used to think in the meetings. And then I watched my friends start dying. Like, I watched people that I got into the rooms with do that like I was doing, and they would go back out, and they're not here anymore. Like, so many of my friends are dead. Don't even talk to me about my rehab class. I think I'm, like, one of the only ones that are still alive. I mean, this disease kills. And we're so lucky that we get to get sober at a young age and have fun and, like, you know, go out and get in relationships and, like, be a part of this world that is amazing. But if I'm not entering that world with a sober mind, I'm entering it with a sick mind, with an alcoholic mind. And I'm going to keep reaching for things to fill the God-sized hole inside of me. And I have a sponsee. He's really funny. He's a dresser on Broadway. He's like, well, my God-sized hole is a Tony-shaped. And the only thing that will fill it is a Tony Award. And I was like, okay, whatever. Whatever your poison is, you know, but it's wonderful because I think at times like this money, property, prestige, you know, you guys, my God, did I tell you how old I was? I'm not sure why I did that, but whatever. So 20, emotionally 11, I'm 37, next month I'll be 38. Like a lot of my friends are married with kids and they all went down this path. And you guys, like I would go to these meetings for the last 5 years and all at these anniversary meetings, everyone would be like, I'm just so grateful I got married this year. And then someone else would get up and he's like, my wife had a baby this year. And we're like beyond, you know, life beyond my wildest dreams. And I would sit in the meetings and I would literally think, what is wrong with me? That's not happening to me. That's not my truth. That's not my reality. Am I doing something wrong? Like I would sit there and I would think to myself, God, what? I guess I'm just not that special. I guess maybe I haven't worked the steps hard enough or I haven't done this hard enough. And I remember I called my sponsor one night and I said, you know, this program's fucked. I was like, I've been doing this shit for like 16 years, you know, it was last year. And I said, and you know, I've sponsored so many women. I've been working these steps. I'm like, where's mine? Where is mine? Wow. Where is mine? I said to the sponsor. He said, Therese, you have a Santa Claus God. I said, a what? He's like, you have a Santa Claus God. You've got this God that if things work out and you get all these things that you think you're supposed to have and supposed to do, then you'll believe. Then you'll be okay. Then you'll pray. Then you'll share the gratitude in meetings. He's like, how's that working out for you? Oh, my God. I wanted to throw the phone against the wall, but too expensive. I just basically like shut up and I listened to him because I used to fight. I used to fight and be like, you don't know. And somewhere around year 15, I like lost. I lost my chutzpah. Like I just lost. But thank God I did, you guys, because I fought everything. I fought everything these sponsors were trying to tell me. And what they're telling me is actually like saving my life. And I said, what does that mean, a Santa Claus God? He said, Therese, you got to find a higher power that will work in any and all conditions. You got to find a higher power that is your best fucking friend. And I said, okay. And my higher power today, you guys, like it's weird. I don't really get it, but I feel it. And what I feel is that it absolutely adores me. It is hopelessly in love with me. Because when I am there and I'm like, oh my God, it's going OKCupid, or I'm like, oh my God, why am I not married? I quiet it down, I take a deep breath, I put my hand to my heart, I know, right? I put my hand to my heart and I just say, Rezzy, I got you, girl. And what I finally have learned, that this journey of sobriety, what the whole thing has been about, because the whole time everyone's like, higher power, higher power, higher power. I kept thinking it was out here. You know, and I kept, because I was raised super, super fundamental Irish Catholic. And I kept seeing the dude with the beard in the sky in the chair, and I was just like, oh, I can't connect, I can't connect. I don't know what gave me the grace to put my hand to my heart and reassure myself and soothe myself, but you guys, there it is, right there. Get on your team. Believe in yourself. I am going to continue to try to fill the God-shaped hole if I don't connect with me and be there for me. And that's my higher power. It's my highest self. It's when I want to start grabbing for stuff outside of me like that little baby and like grab my rattle and grab this, taking a deep breath, putting my hand to my heart and just saying, I got you, girl. And I had to do that today. I just went through a pretty big breakup with someone I thought I was, you know, going to have, you know, my movie, married and family and stuff like that. And he had other plans. And so I'm moving out of the apartment we shared together. And I got really angry today. And I wanted to reach out to him. And I wanted him to make it better. And I was really mad. And I got home and I knew I needed to eat. I think I was halting. It's always food related. You know, first. And so as I was cramming a hard-boiled egg in my mouth, I had my hand to my heart. But what I said to myself was, I know you want to reach out to him, and I know you think that that's like going to make it better. But I'm here now. And you can be as uncomfortable as you need to be, but I'm not going anywhere. And I just, like, the anger just, like, flowed out. It just went away. And I never, ever, ever knew that I could do that. I've spent so many years sober and using, just looking for something or someone to do that for me, you guys. And it's been me I've been waiting for the whole time. We're amazing, beautiful, incredible, gorgeous people. And everyone has told me that my entire life. And I was like, I was hearing, you know, Chinese or something. Like, I didn't understand what they were saying. And when they say, don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle happens, I think this is what they're talking about. Because I'm going to keep going through breakups and people are going to die. And things aren't going to go as I want them to, and I'm not going to get that job. Sorry. Wow. What's going on? I'm not sorry. I'm feeling. It's okay. We can all handle this, right? But if I give up on me, then that stuff is going to feel like the end of the world. But if I have me, and I'm connected there, and I am on my team, guys, I can get through anything. Anything. Because I'll tell you, 3 o'clock in the morning, when there's nobody to text message and there's nobody to call, I realized the other night, I was like, wow, it's just me and you. And I was talking to my higher power, and I just felt this peace come over me. And I remembered being 3 years old and crying hysterically. I don't know why. I must have gotten hit. I don't know, something crazy. And I remember I ran into this room that I was sharing with my sisters, and I laid on the bed. And you know when you cry when you're a little kid and you're like, and or maybe right now, I don't know. And I laid on the bed and my face was beet red. And I remember I looked out and the window, there was sun coming through it, and there was a tree right outside the window, and there was all these little patterns on the carpet. And I remember, I was like 3, 4 years old, you guys. And I remember looking at that, and I just felt this peace inside of me, like something was hugging me from the inside out. And that's exactly what I felt a couple nights ago when I was just sobbing about this breakup. And I was like, oh, I just felt that peace again. So I'm building more sober reference that we can get through anything. And it's beautiful because the woman that I'm meeting today, I really like. I would be friends with myself today. That's a miracle. I used to be so mean to myself and talk to myself. The way I talk to myself, I would never talk to one of my friends that way. It's unacceptable today. So I've gone on enough. Let me hear from you guys. Thank you.